Well, the good news is I'm the last speaker today. Bad news is they gave me 45 minutes to ramble on. So, Dawn, your job is to keep me on track. Last time I was at one of these conferences, the moderator fell asleep. And that's always a bad sign when the speaker has to wake the moderator up and ask if there's any time left. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. What we'd like to talk today about is the issue of nitrates in groundwater. And what I'd like to kind of frame this presentation out in a couple of different ways, but one of them is how severe a problem is nitrate in groundwater right now? Why is it so darn challenging to characterize this stuff? And then I'd like to move on to some discussion. We had a lot of discussion yesterday about metrics and the use of surveys and giving us ideas on where we're at with grower adoption. So I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about where we think we're at right now in that process. And then I'd like to wrap it up with talking about how the state in general is going to respond to these nitrate issues related to agricultural activities, and then close it out with some proposed nitrogen rules that are we're moving forward with. In Minnesota, for those of you that are not familiar with Minnesota, groundwater is a really important resource to us. About 3/4 of all Minnesotans get their drinking water from groundwater supplies, so it's absolutely imperative that we keep this resource as clean as possible. Before we go into the details, though, I'd like to first welcome you all to this conference. We've had some experience in the past hosting ASA conferences. This was one of our very first conferences about 20 years ago, and I think we had to say we had a great view, lots of fresh air, the scenery was good, but man, the parking was a problem. So hopefully you found your accommodations while you've been staying with us this week much better than that. Steve talked about the impact of the Clean Water Legacy funding and the profound impact that that's had on the state since 2008. And I think this afternoon you're going to hear a lot of presentations with a lot of enthusiasm to them. And I can't overemphasize the importance of that funding mechanism to all of the state agencies in terms of working in these environmental programs. This has just been absolutely fantastic. And one of the things that's happened as a result of those new dollars coming in, it's an appreciable amount of money. There's been also a lot of public scrutiny. This issue of nitrates in groundwater and surface waters has been in the media an enormous amount over the last 5 years. I've been with the Department of Ag for a little over 25 years, and I don't think we've ever had this level of interest, which is absolutely great. But it's really important that we properly communicate, and so hopefully the right message gets out. The title of this particular news article was Paying a Price for Fertilizer at the Faucet. Obviously, this one got farmers a little jacked up, and probably rightly so. But it was a very interesting discussion about some of the homeowners that live in Dakota County. This is a county that's roughly 30 miles from here, directly south of us, and how they're dealing with nitrate problems, real estate transactions, and so forth. And it's just a good reminder that we are dealing with a very complex problem. We have to communicate it properly. And part of our job as state agencies is to make sure that we're providing proper assurance to not only our citizens, but also policymakers that we're taking the appropriate steps in trying to resolve the issue. Just a few things that we're dealing with, and we're going to hear a lot more discussion this afternoon about some of the factors that we're dealing with. But one of the big issues in the state is just the sheer size of the state. We roughly have 20 to 21 million acres of farmland. We think, based on the sensitivity analysis, that roughly 20% or one out of every 5 acres one out of every 5 acres of cropland overlies sensitive groundwater systems. And so we're looking at roughly 4 million acres that, from an agronomic perspective, we should be very concerned about. What this map shows is our 5 nitrogen BMP regions. These are clusters of similar soils, climate, and cropping systems. And we can see we've got some pretty broad diversity in terms of those percentages, with the southeast karst obviously probably being one of the most sensitive, as well as the areas that Jeff and others talked about in central Minnesota. This is an area where we have a lot of irrigated production. A lot of our specialty crops are grown in the central area. These soils are characterized by low organic matter, shale depth of groundwater, and a lot of times this is a lot where our irrigation takes place. So these are very, very sensitive systems. Many of you know this, but the general rule of thumb for dealing with contaminants such as phosphorus and soil erosion is that 90% plus of the contaminant comes from less than 10% of the land area. And nitrogen is a very, very different animal to deal with. And we have to think very carefully about crop selection and implementation of practices that are going to be able to have the ability to treat many areas if we're going to come up with a reasonable response strategy. So we have to think about this thing considerably differently. And part of that is crop selection. These crops are not created equal in terms of contributions to groundwater in terms of nitrates. And what we're seeing in the state of Minnesota is a gradual increase towards more and more acres of what I term leaky crop systems. Corn, soybeans, potatoes, edible beans. These are crops that have replaced very important perennial systems or some of our small grains in the rotations. So the problem isn't getting any smaller by any means. Dr. Mark Seeley will talk this afternoon about climate change, and another big driver that we have to deal with is this moving target of climate change, bigger leaching events, and so forth. So you'll hear a lot more about that this afternoon. What I'd like to do is quickly go over kind of an overview of where we're at in terms of our agronomic practices related to nitrogen management. And to do that, first I want to point out that in the state of Minnesota, we do have very well-defined best management practices on a regional basis. These 4 R's or BMPs were developed well over 25 years ago. As I said before, we have 5 nitrogen BMP regions, and each one of these publications to the University of Minnesota Extension Service helps define what those practices are, and it serves as a very useful benchmark as we try to do assessments and identify where in of all this laundry list of things we want growers to do, which are the ones that are going to be most beneficial in terms of not only economic but environmental return. So the next couple of slides is simply an analysis of our sales information that we monitor at the Department of Ag. And if you look at the last 25 years of nitrogen sales, it's a pretty flat system. We just don't see a lot of differences here, with the exception of the years 2011 to about 14, when corn prices were strong. We did see an increase of about 8% in our overall fertilizer sales. But in the big scheme of things, this line remains fairly flat. If we look at our rates on corn, and corn in Minnesota utilizes roughly 3/4 of all of our commercial nitrogen inputs, we do see a gradual increase, particularly in the last 5 years or so. But when you really start to analyze the system and you start looking at the relationships between inputs to corn, which is the bottom line, planted acres, and then look at what's coming out of the system in terms of production, it's a little bit more of an exciting story. And the fact that we put all of these components together, we can come up with either called partial factor productivity or nitrogen use efficiency in its very simplest terms. It looks like we're continually heading in the right direction. We're We're growing more corn with every pound of nitrogen fertilizer that we put into the system. This is a very simple metric that the public tends to understand quite well. It doesn't characterize all of the issues, but it's one that I think both farmers and the general public can appreciate. And I do firmly believe that we're making a lot of progress in our management practices. The other tale that I'd like to talk about is our fertilizer use and crediting, and this is achieved through a series of surveys, pretty massive surveys that we do at the Department of Ag on an annual basis. This information is extremely helpful for things like developing educational curriculum, where we're going to go, what are the key target areas. And yesterday, for those of you that sat in our metrics discussion, Dr. Dave Muller talked a little bit about some of the nitrogen modeling work that they're doing in both surface and groundwater, and it's this information that really helps fuel those models to great significance. One of the things that we found for us in the state of Minnesota that was extraordinarily beneficial, the partnership with the National Ag Statistics Service. This federal entity has trained enumerators. There's roughly 200 of them in the city of St. Louis, where we contract with NAS to do these phone surveys for us. And we have some great ability to quickly characterize various management practices by over-the-phone interviews with NAS's help. So the Department of Ag develops the surveys, and then NAS actually implements them, and within a period of 2 to 3 weeks, we can commonly cover well over 1 million acres of cropland. And I'll reference the study in a second that we've done from our 2010 study, and in that particular study, we had over 4,500 Minnesota corn growers involved with that. And it gave us a really good idea of where we're currently at with those practices. For those of you outside of Minnesota and that you're interested in doing this, I strongly recommend that you talk with your state NAS people. They certainly have the tools and the expertise to do this type of work for us. This is one of the reports that came out of one of the NAS studies. What's valuable about this, and I'll walk you through some of the scenarios, and you can readily get these reports from our website, but basically what we've done after dissecting some of these rotations and trying to understand where in the system can we make improvements, and also, very importantly, work when we applaud growers for already adopting some of these practices, these things have some great value. The way we look at nitrogen rates is we actually, in the green bar, show the rates that the University of Minnesota recommends, and then we use 15-pound increments below and above the university guidelines as we try to describe what kind of rate distributions that we see in these systems. So let's dissect a couple of these rotations. First, the simplest one is corn on corn. Again, there was about 4,500 Minnesota corn growers that were involved in this. And by the way, one of the things that's key to success in getting a high percent of growers participating in this survey is to make darn sure that the commodity groups are on board with this. When the corn growers do news releases and really promote this type of a survey, so when growers get calls from St. Louis and there's a little bit of a southern twang, they know what's going on and they're anticipating that they might be important information providers in that whole process. When we look at this corn-on-corn rotation, we can see that there's a nice distribution between the university recommendations and the guidelines in this particular scenario. What's interesting, though, is when we start to factor in the value of legumes and fertilizer replacement value of manure, those are really important contributions in Minnesota, as probably as well as your state. And it's well worth the time to look into these amounts and look at these rotations very carefully. And the reason why is here's an example of what we see again with the same corn growers, but now they're telling us fertilizer rates on corn, fallow, and soybeans. And in this particular example, the green again is the university guidelines. In this case, 100 to 140 pounds of nitrogen per acre following soybeans would be the recommended rate. And we can see that the mean has drifted all the way over to 148 pounds. And the red is over 15 pounds greater than the university recommendations. And now we're starting to get into the areas where we're starting to get a little concerned about groundwater quality, leaching, carryover nitrogen, from rates that are approaching that type of magnitude. The other place that we think we can make some vast differences is in the rotation following alfalfa. Alfalfa is just an absolutely wonderful crop in terms of a nitrogen scavenger. We commonly use alfalfa in source water protection areas and other key recharge areas because it is such an effective scavenger. The downside to that whole thing is eventually that crop's got to be plowed down, and if we don't take the proper credit for it, we probably just negated all of the environmental benefits of that crop because of the lack of crediting. And what we've seen in this survey, again, the red is well over 70% of the fields that following alfalfa, we can see some pretty severe over-application rates in this scenario. One thing that's very obvious through the help of the soil and water districts and local partners that we have made some pretty significant improvements in manure management. The PCA and Extension Service have really dived into this big time, and I truly believe that we've made some significant advances, and our commercial waste applicator program, I think, has helped significantly with that crediting process. In this particular question from our NAS survey, again, we tried to dive into rates with manure, and this one's kind of interesting. Roughly half the growers were well within the university guidelines, which means they're taking the proper crediting and backing off on the commercial inputs. But you can see again on the far right side that we've still got somewhat of an abnormal distribution curve. This study was done by the University of Minnesota, Jeff Coulter and Michael Russell and Yost just recently put together. And what they were looking at was crediting after first year alfalfa with and without manure. And again, this data seems to do a nice job of supporting what we're finding in our NAS studies. If you looked on the left-hand side, these are the rates without manure. And we can see in some situations, the growers are applying well over 100 pounds per acre, and again, due to the lack of crediting. Where we really see some opportunity to make growers being able to reap those financial benefits of both the alfalfa and the manure, we can see in some of these cases we had some rate applications of over 200 pounds per acre. So this, I think, really helps us understand the value of the research. There was a large research project to help identify those fields where we would tend not to see the response to alfalfa crediting. And I think the university and ARS has done a really good job of starting to identify how we can pick those fields up and hopefully get growers to appreciate those crediting much better. Timing's an easy one to look at, and by and large, fall applications of nitrogen is a very important management practice in this state. With our cooler temperatures, particularly on our heavier soils, our growers and dealers really rely an enormous amount on fall application. We don't have a lot of a very large time window in the spring, and we want to protect those practices if at all possible where it's appropriate. And not every place in Minnesota is an appropriate place for fall application. But roughly about one-third of our nitrogen goes on in the fall. When we look at the regional distribution, the red is the spring applications, blue is fall, and then we have some side dress. And in areas where we should not be putting fall applications on, like in the southeast karst or the central sands, we're going to see that there's some very, very good compliance with the no-fall fertilization. Other areas of the state, like South Central, where we do, it is a recommended best management practice to fall apply as long as we use the fall temperatures and use a nitrification inhibitor. And again, by and large, we see some pretty good compliance with that, those practices. But let's shift gears here just a little bit and talk about nitrates in groundwater. How severe of a problem is it? And statewide, looking at the Department of Health's County Well Index, this is the index that's developed when a well is first installed. The well driller has to take a sample, provide the well log to the Department of Health. So for all wells since 1975 that were installed, there's some water quality data that goes into that process. And if you look at the big picture scheme of things, about 5% of the wells in Minnesota exceed the drinking water standard of 10 parts per million. One of the things that we've worked very hard at with Department of Health and our other agencies is coming up with better regional monitoring networks. Obviously, the public is very interested in knowing, are we making progress or not? How severe is this? This is a network that was designed for southeast Minnesota. We have multiple aquifers in southeast. It's very complicated to try to answer this question. So what we did is we developed a network with partnership with our soil and water districts and came up with this grid of homeowner wells that the homeowners provide samples to us on an annual basis. And we've been able to monitor those wells for about the last 6 years or so. And what we're seeing is about 9 to 14% of those wells. This is probably our most problematic area of the state, but 9 to 14% exceed the standard based on this network. So this type of data, I think, will be extraordinarily valuable for decades to come, and we'll be able to hopefully answer this question in much more detail on whether we're making progress or not. We've done the same thing in the Central Sands, again, with the 14 Central Sands counties. 1,500 homeowners were contacted. It was a statistically designed system. We did this one through the mail. Homeowners sent the samples in, and now we've got about 500 of those subset populations that we go back to that same home, at least on an annual basis. And again, what we're seeing here is that about 5% of our wells are exceeding the standard. So what's the big deal? Why are we worried about this? This doesn't sound that severe. But what we're finding through another program that we're doing, called our Township Testing Program, is that it appears that our County Well Index and our regional networks are far too coarse to help us identify where we have hot spots on a very localized level. And this Township Testing Program, which I'll talk a little bit more in detail about, is one that provides us a very high density resolution. It's done on a very localized scale, and it's done kind of in a snapshot format where we will sample the entire township within a very, very short period of time, about 3 to 6 months, and we can do a full township or a cluster of townships. The department's taken the bull by the horns on this. What we've decided to do, and the methodology with this is we've looked at the DNR coverage maps in terms of groundwater sensitivity. That's our first guiding light. And then we overlay areas of the state where we have 30% or more cropland in those particular localities. And what we've identified is, we believe, about 300 townships that we have some concerns about. So again, it's a pretty large area to be dealing with, but this is our first cut. This is the map that we first start discussions with our local partners, They know a lot more about what's going on in their county or locality than we possibly could. But this is where we're going to start the process. And our goal is pretty lofty. But again, because of the clean water legacy money that's been infused into the state, we think we can pull this off. What we'd like to do is sample all of these townships, all 300, by the year 2018. We're estimating that there's about 70,000 households in these townships. And again, these are all households that are on private well systems. So we've got a lot of work to do. I'm going to talk a little bit about how we get that done in just a second. But we'll probably have one of the largest, most complete data sets in the country once this is achieved. What we are finding so far, and I want to preface the fact that we picked probably the worst case scenario so far. We picked eight counties to start this process. What this graphic is showing is the results from the first 60 townships that we tested. There's about 7,300 wells in this data set, and what we're finding is pretty eye-opening. First, on the right side, roughly 50% of the wells exceed the standard of 10 parts per million or more. And for some reason, my percentages are not showing up here. But if you look at the center and the far right bars, roughly three quarters of those wells are at least 5 parts per million or higher. So how are we going to deal with this? And the Department of Ag is the lead agency in responding to nitrogen fertilizer and pesticides in groundwater. That's our statutory authority. What I'd like to do is discuss what's called our nitrogen fertilizer management plan for the next few minutes, and then close this discussion out. But this plan is basically the state's blueprint for how we're going to move forward in these impacted areas, and maybe as importantly, how we're going to prevent getting in this situation in the future. We've spent a lot of time and energy with going through the revision process in the last 3 years. I'll show you just conceptually what this looks like based on the 1989 Groundwater Protection Act. It's a pretty simple design. I think it's a very efficient one. But basically what the Groundwater Protection Act was saying is first identify the severity of a contaminant, and in this case it's nitrates in groundwater, determine if it's acceptable or not, and then the Groundwater Act also guided us to look at the adoption of BMPs and answer the question, are growers adopting the best science out there or not? And it's that matrix between the conditions of groundwater and the conditions of the human element, we have to make some decisions on how we're going to move forward. And that's key in whether we're going to stay in voluntary mode or are we going to move into some type of a regulatory process. I want to thank the people that, there's a few of you in the room here that helped us go through that revision process. This was a big deal for us. It took us 2 years. We had a big work group that consisted of all the ag commodity groups, several environmental groups, the state agencies, local units of government, as well as the University of Minnesota as we went through that review process. We then took the plan on the road for the public review process in the fall of 2013, and we did finally release the plan in its entirety this spring. So what we got done with the committee's help is first put a lot more definition into the plan. The original plan conceptually was great, but it just didn't have enough metrics or guiding numbers in there to really provide some clear definition on how we're supposed to move forward. If you look at the top left, there's a category called prevention. Think of that as the vast majority of Minnesota. In most areas of the state, we've got excellent groundwater. The prevention areas that we want to keep that way, but we don't have a nitrate problem there as of yet. Levels 1 through 4 are areas of the state where we're finding elevated nitrates, and the higher the number, the worst case conditions are of the nitrate conditions. So what we did then is we really wrestled with this whole issue of what's the right number in terms of nitrate concentrations. What the committee decided on was, in the prevention mode, anything less than, if 5% of the wells in the local area were less than the drinking water standard, we were going to classify it as a prevention mode. Again, these are areas that we don't have significant problems. With level 1, 5% or more, so that's starting to mean that, yeah, we should be very concerned. Let's start the process now. We know it takes years and years to fix these issues, but we've identified areas of concern. Level 2 and level 3, that is not a typo. Those are both the same water quality standards of 10% or more. What's different with those two levels is at some point in time, the department has to make a determination on whether growers are adopting the science or not. And again, that's could go into a regulatory issue. Level 4 is the worst case scenario, 15% or more exceed the standards. So again, that's a great metric to work with. We posed the question yesterday during the metrics discussion, how are we going to do that? And we get back to this township testing approach that we developed. By the way, the farm commodity groups really wanted high resolution data as we move forward. They didn't want us using archaic information from 20 or 30 years ago or the county well index. They also wanted to have the best science that was out there as we move forward. So we think this approach, as simple as it is, gets it done. Are you sleeping back there, Don? How am I doing on time? Okay, let me tell you a little bit about how this plan is going to work. Again, it works on a township scale. We showed you the sensitivity maps of how we've identified those 300 townships that we're going to target. All the residents that are on private well systems in that township will be offered no-cost nitrate testing as part of the program. Everything is done through the mail. We contract with our local partners, either soil and water districts and environmental services, to get this done. There are our local champions. The letter that comes to the homeowners is going to be joint from the Department of Ag and our local partners. The districts do a lot of the promotion work. And, that's really some key steps to ensure that we get a high level of participation. The ag commodity groups wanted the work done by certified labs. If we're going to use this information and make policy decisions, let's make sure it's done right. So we use certified testing labs for all of the sampling. And again, the homeowner gets the package in the mail, instructions how to fill the bottle, send the sample into the lab. We do send a short survey along with that well sample, so we get some idea of distances from septic tanks, how old the well is, the well construction, and some of those things. And by the way, at some point in time, we do go back for some of the elevated wells, and we will do a site visit, and we will do a resampling of that well if that's possible. We do want to take the wells out that are impacted from point sources before we make any policy decisions on moving forward with the township. If you recall, the plan, again, the nitrate criteria, level 1, 5% or more, level 2 or higher is 10% or more. What those bottom lines are showing you is the results, again, of those 60 townships that we've already completed. And as I said before, about three-quarters of those wells that have been sampled so far are in excess of 5 parts per million. And half of the townships would fall into a level 2 or higher. So we've got much bigger problems than I think we've ever anticipated. And that was one of the problems that we had with the plan initially, was you know, how big a thing is this? We don't know. And that's why testing is one of the key elements. The plan also includes not only private homeowners, but public drinking water supplies. We roughly have 25 public water suppliers that utilize groundwater that have nitrates of concern. And this will be a top priority for the department as we move forward, and we work closely with the Department of Health and our local public water suppliers as we move forward. Let me give you just a couple of overarching principles of the plan so you kind of get a flavor of what this thing's all about. But it's an enormous amount of emphasis on problem solving and bringing local communities together to help us. This is a very complicated process. We can't regulate our way out of this one very well. It's going to require a lot of buy-in from local producers. To move this forward, we've done a lot of this type of work in source water protection areas in the past. A lot of the elements of the plan that were successful and unsuccessful were discussed at great detail with the revision committee. And a lot of these techniques and tools and demonstration sites that we've developed, I think, are very appropriate and effective moving forward. Local advisory teams, particularly dominated by producers and dealers, is going to be absolutely critical. And site-specific strategies are definitely going to be needed. We can't cookbook through this. Every one of these areas is going to have a different solution. And having growers at the table along with our local dealerships is going to be key. One thing that we want to make sure growers understand is that if they adopt the best science that's out there, it's very unlikely that we would continue to move forward with additional nitrogen regulations. It just doesn't, what are you going to regulate? What are you going to force them to do? The department doesn't have the authority to tell growers to start growing different crops or stop farming. So there is some practical aspects to the whole plan as well. The plan also recognizes in some areas, and Dakota County might be one of those, that we've got certain geological conditions, short distances to groundwater. It's going to be extremely difficult to protect the groundwater resources, even if growers adopted every practice that was out there. And in those particular cases, we will be looking at other strategies, trying to bring in very targeted perennial systems and key recharge areas. In some cases, the cropping systems will be looking for some alternative selections. And eventually, things like cover crop systems, as we research more and more of those things, I think there's truly some great opportunities down the road, but we've got to get the research component done first. Don't want to go into a lot of detail on each step of the levels. It's far too complicated to talk about that in this short period of time. But I'm just going to run through a couple of steps that we go through in a level two. Again, local work teams are a real critical part of that. And we're leaning on the University of Minnesota Extension Service to help us with some of the leadership skills and community readiness efforts that are being led. The department also needs to assess on a local level those current management practices. We do that for a number of reasons. One is, first, we want to make sure we design appropriate educational materials as we move forward. And we also obviously need to know at some point in time and make a determination if growers are where they're at in terms of those adoption levels. We have 3 years. Once we've identified a township to have a problem and get the local team together, we've got 3 years to make some progress without, and if we do that, we can successfully avoid future regulations down the road. Again, if growers adopt those practices, regardless of what the water quality is like, keep in mind that there's a lot of lag time issues here, a lot of things that are out of our control. But we want to assure that the growers, if they adopt those practices, we will not move forward with additional regulations. If you're interested in knowing the other steps in the plan, I'd encourage you to check the plan out, which is on our website. Again, in a nutshell, the department's fertilizer management plan has to consider water quality and human behavior, and it's that interface or combination of occurrences that we would make decisions on whether we're going to stay in the voluntary mode or move forward in a regulatory mode. Lastly, we are moving forward with several proposed rules on nitrogen fertilizer. I know they're not very popular, but the commissioner took a very strong stance that he wanted to send a strong message that we're serious about this. And we are moving forward with two different parts of the rule. Rule one is restrictions on fall applications. Where these are going to happen is just in areas that are designated as vulnerable. So even though we're in a zone such as South Central Minnesota where we do allow fall applications, if those are coarse textured materials or vulnerable areas, they can still apply as long as they use a nitrification inhibitor on the heavier soils, but no applications on coarse textured. So each one of these BMP regions will have different restrictions. If everything goes as planned, we don't see this as highly controversial. I think most of the stuff is common sense. But what we're going to have to work through is things like MAP and DAP. Are we going to allow fall applications for that or not? And so we're currently seeking public input on some of these restrictions and trying to make sure that this is practical and effective as well. Part two of the rural restrictions is much more on a localized level. Again, on a township level, if we have to move forward with some type of a regulatory step, we want to have those rules in development. So we've got staff working on that process right now, and we've got some notices out in the state register right now looking for comment. So I think with that, if you're interested in knowing more about the rule timeline, just Google Minnesota nitrogen fertilizer and you'll come up with this page and you'll be able to find the nitrogen fertilizer management plan as well. How are we doing on time, Don? Well, I've got another 50 slides. Okay. Finally, thanks to all of you that are visitors here. If you see something like this odd down the streets of Minneapolis, it's probably just a Packer fan. Don't worry, we're all harmless. But thanks for coming, and enjoy the rest of your trip here. Thank you.